My name is Gary Butterfield, he, him.
My name is Kay Ross, she, her.
And you're listening to Best Quality Vacuum, the duck feed show about Better Call Saul.
And this week we are talking about the episode Smoke, which was written by Peter Gould, directed by Minky Spiro, and it originally aired on August the 6th of 2018.
Yeah, they always say where there's smoke, there's fire, but this episode presupposes where there's fire, there's smoke.
Where there's lanterns, there's smoke.
Yeah. This is the immediate aftermath of Chuck's self-immolation. Jimmy is in a daze, and Howard kind of handles everything else. You know, the obituary, the will, does all the stuff that Jimmy would have done if Jimmy wasn't discarded, I feel like.
Right. Yeah. Well, we have Mike. Some very fun stuff with Mike.
It's like one of my favorite montages in the show.
Because he can't just take his own money. He can't just have somebody pay his FICA for him. He's got to go and work for it. So he's going to become Mike Ehrmantraut, rogue security consultant.
I love the security consultant storyline of this. It is real go nowhere. Like it's really kind of a nothing, but I like it.
I like seeing Mike be competent, right?
Competency goal. We get to check in with the Nacho storyline. Not a whole lot here. That's gonna be a big thing in the next episode.
Yeah.
And then in the opening season Monochromaha bits, we're introduced to Jeff. Mm-hmm. At this point, they recast him. He's played by John Harvey here, which I think is I like this casting a lot more than the guy they actually got.
Yeah, yeah.
This guy has a real menace to him, and then they replaced him with like Nebbish McGee, and it's not as good. I think.
Yeah, this guy is way more unpredictable.
Yes,
than the other one. I mean, the next season, we're gonna get him just kind of toying,
confronting him.
Toying with Jimmy. But yeah, here we mostly just get his eyes though, as he's like staring up into the rear view. This whole opening is so tense.
Very tense. It's tense, and it's like a real like, oh, phew, made it out of that one.
Yeah.
And then as soon as you let your guard down, the thing. The other thing, just last thing I want to say about this actor, and this is a weird thing to quantify. Mm-hmm. He has a more interesting looking face than the guy they got. Like, he has a lot of character to his face. Sometimes people are just interesting looking in terms of telegenics. Like, I like looking at this dude's face. Mm-hmm. I think it's interesting. I don't like the new guy as much.
Yeah.
It's one of my big disappointments. I understand it just had to happen. It's okay, scheduling, stuff like that.
Yeah, the other guy has got kind of a Willie Loman sad sack thing about him. This guy seems like he would really enjoy being in the life, in the game, right?
Yeah. We start off black and white. This is set to the Ink Spots. We three, my echo, my shadow, and me. Love the Ink Spots. So funny. Every single song having the exact same structure down to the exact same notes in the intro is very funny.
Ding, 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 ding.
For Modric, I keep thinking about maybe our signature calling card like that is every song having the "now it's time for the breakdown" thing from Never Gonna Get It. And just announcing the breakdown and doing a breakdown every single song with that sample. Now it's time for the breakdown.
Mm-hmm.
Gene has fainted. Emergency services arrive. They're kind of gathering him up, taking him to the hospital. And he's very nervous.
Mm-hmm. You know, like there are police hanging around outside, as they do in emergency rooms.
This ain't good, you know. Mm-hmm. The doctor says he's okay. It was just, you know, the big picture here is false alarm.
Uh-huh.
And he goes to the front desk, and the receptionist asks for another look at his driver's license.
Yeah. One of the things that I like about you know, the Best Quality Vacuum service, is that he's presented as this gigantic, you know, get out of jail free card, you know, kind of deal. Like, it's not that. Right.
Yeah.
Like, you know, it, you know, he is not magical. Stuff falls apart under close scrutiny, you know, hence we get Gene kind of living in the panopticon. Right. So like he's tense about this, you know, I think deservedly so.
Well, we've never seen, you know, we've only seen the disguise a couple of times. We've never actually seen the disguise fail for stuff like this.
Mm-hmm.
Not saying it's impossible, but I think the interesting thing about this scene is that this is what he's worried about, and what he's not worried about is happenstance.
Yeah.
Like, that actually gets him. Like, he's so scared of the police just recognizing him, people just seeing him and everything, and, you know, people are invisible.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, but not to somebody who actually knows you.
Yeah.
You know, as a thing. It's his fame that does him in. It's not, you know, if he had been a nobody, he'd mm-hmm. be fine.
Yeah. You know, this. And I guess thinking about it, like Walter White was never going to have like a Blue Heaven kind of thing. Like,
yeah.
The reason he got put where he did was because of his massive profile.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, and I do believe that if Gene never met this dude,
mm-hmm.
you know, had this little bit of quinky dink, I think he probably could have just laid low, except as they're increasingly showing, that is a hell. For him. He had a panic attack of being drawn back into the lawyering life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he cannot do it.
No.
You know, him and Kim both put themselves in different kinds of prisons before he goes to prison.
Yeah. You know, I was not watching the season concurrently or the series concurrently when this happened, but like, mm-hmm. I have to imagine that there were a lot of people who, after the previous season, were thinking like, oh, Walt fainted. We've got Gene getting lung cancer. I'm glad they didn't go that direction where the sickness was going to be the thing.
Big time. Yeah. So eventually, you know, she's looking through his social security number. It's not going through, you know, and he's like, I got a cab. You know, here you go. He's thinking about running. Mm-hmm. She goes, oh, wait. Oh, my God. And then she's like, oh, I typed it wrong. She is comically nice, too. This is very silly. You know, people in Omaha are nice, but.
Yeah.
And then, you know, he thinks he's fine. He gets a cab back to the mall. That's where his car is. He's breathing in the back. And then he looks up and he sees the driver has an Albuquerque Isotopes air freshener, which I love because of that Simpsons episode.
It's not actually a thing. Like, I have to imagine they made this specifically so it could be a Simpsons reference.
These are the kind of bold flavors that they enjoy in Albuquerque.
The bold Southwestern flavors. Jalapenos, sage.
You know me, Albuquerque. He sees this air freshener and the driver's looking right at him.
Yeah.
And Gene asked to get out. He's not listened to. He goes, no, I'll get out here. It's fine. Pays his money and then leaves. The cab doesn't pull away. Gene sits down and tries to tie his shoe, giving it time. It never pulls away.
Yeah.
So Gene rounds the corner and starts freaking out.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody has certainly made him.
Yeah.
You know,
he got made. His plan fell apart when Nebraska was not on the different planet from New Mexico.
Yeah. Other people have moved from New Mexico.
Uh-huh.
That's the one thing they didn't plan for.
Yeah.
You know? And I can also almost imagine like it being in Ed's The Disappearer's instructions, like, you know, don't do a lot of transit.
Mm-hmm.
Don't do, you know, limit your exposure to this kind of shit if you can. Yeah. He just had a medical emergency.
Mm-hmm.
We cut over to this, I feel like this is a little cheesy, mm-hmm. of embers of the fire that killed Chuck drifting along with the camera as it pans into Jim and Kimmy in bed.
Yeah, a little film schooly.
Little film schooly. Jimmy gets up, makes breakfast, looking at the paper for jobs. Little trivia, there's a positions for the laser base and Beneke Fabrications here.
Mm-hmm.
And he ignores a call from Howard, takes some coffee to Kim, you know, and then Howard calls the house.
Yeah.
And the answering machine says, hey, I really need to talk to Jimmy. It's about Chuck.
Mm-hmm.
And we cut to Jimmy and Kim racing to Chuck's place.
Yes. And they find that it has been replaced with a visual effect shot of Chuck's house, but burned.
It got JPEG'd.
It's only one shot that you see it. And then it's kind of feature blurred in the background. I guess they did build a set because they talked about like how difficult it was. It looks very poorly composited to make it appear to be on the street. I understand it's television, but it always sticks out to me when I see this episode.
Yeah. Jimmy notices the coroner pulling away and Howard goes, no. Howard is still, I like Howard's decency, even though he's going to be a shit in this, but he's trying.
Yeah.
This is kind of like the beginning of the Howard decency and really having shit done to him
mm-hmm.
in this. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Or like kind of the arc of like really showing me that personally, mm-hmm. I guess, when I first watched it.
Yeah.
Jimmy's sitting on a bench looking up at the power pole transformer and Kim comes over to give the report. From mm-hmm. the inspector, you know, is the lantern. You know, he says, oh yeah, Chuck would have died very quickly of smoke inhalation. He goes, yeah, they'll say that. You know, it's like going to sleep.
Famously, just like going to sleep.
And then Jimmy says, you know, I looked in the back lawn, like all the electronics are out there. You know, the fireman didn't do that. He did that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, last time I saw Chuck, he was listening to jazz. He was fine. All the lights were on. Yeah. Something made him relapse.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes.
And you know, what we're seeing here, you know, what's most important is not said. He's not talking about, you know, the insurance,
yes.
you know, side of things, right?
That's going to come up later. as a thing. But I still maintain from the last episode, I still kind of feel a little bit like it was really him crueling out at Jimmy with this. Like, he was fine. You know, legitimately fine. The actual relapse happened after, like, immediately after that.
Yeah.
As a thing. I'm sure that the insurance thing didn't help.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and everything adds to the pile, right?
Yeah. It still feels like the instigation was that. Yeah. To me. Mike leaves his last shift at the parking lot booth. He has to give his windbreaker up. Goes to his house where he does some gardening with Kaylee. you know, stepping on the hose. Yeah. Pretending not to step on it. The to cut off the water.
The very special hose. Playing grandpa games.
Yes.
With the soaker that he made to, you know, derail the truck.
Yes.
You know, in order to go and hogtie the driver, right?
The Samaritan.
Yeah.
The, you know, Stacy does not like that Mike makes his own hours. Again, making this character the most difficult to nail down. She's like, yeah, I can come back tomorrow. And he goes, oh, what about work? And he goes, I basically make my own hours. He goes, yeah, must be pretty nice. Like, what are you talking about, yeah. Stacy?
I'm putting together a theory that none of this would have happened if Stacy didn't do what
Stacy
she
is,
does.
Is, have we thought that maybe Stacy is a Tyler Durden?
Uh-huh.
And like, doesn't actually exist, and this is Mike's subconscious yelling at him somehow or something.
Me,
like, I have a whole cork board about trying to figure out fucking Stacy's character in this. Must be nice.
Yeah. Somehow. Excuse me? Okay. So Stacy did a jigsaw kind of thing and switched the charts.
Yes.
And that is why that is they didn't spot Walter White's cancer, right? Yep. She swapped the charts. Yeah.
Yep. I'm going to say it. Stacy killed Maddie. So Mike gets home and checks his mail, has his check for Madrigal, and he kind of like scowls at it. He tries to watch a minor league baseball team do grandpa shit, but can't.
Just the depths that this man has been dragged to. Yeah. Like, a minor league baseball game should be like 100 orgasms at once for a Mike Erman Trout.
It's just a way to pass an afternoon for an old man. You sit in the chair, you know, the chair's fine, and you watch the TV's fine.
Yeah.
Just a beautiful day. But he calls information in order to get the Las Cruces branch for Madrigal, because he's going to go do his scheming.
Yes. Jimmy is completely struck, right?
Yes.
He doesn't talk a lot.
No, in this episode, he's pretty out of it until he makes a conscious decision to not be out of it.
Yes.
In like a fakey way.
Yeah.
Kind of what the first half of the season is doing.
So Jimmy just stands there watching water go down the drain, and Kim hands him the phone. It's Howard wanting to run Chuck's obituary by him. And what proceeds is the longest obituary that's ever been. Chuck is not a president.
It's a pretty long, I mean, obituaries are long, even for just people who didn't do anything. It's always surprising. They have to like come up with something. I have a close friend from back home who just like reads the obituaries for my hometown. Mm-hmm. It's very morbid, but we'll send them when it's somebody that we know.
Yeah, no.
The parents, somebody would know.
I feel like every like family or I don't know. There are people in my family who just kind of cruise the obits and send them.
It just but eventually becomes a thing you do, I guess.
Yeah.
But it you know tons of accomplishments, including graduating high school at 14. I didn't realize we had a Doogie Howser in the midst. But yeah, he's full Doogie.
Yep, he's Dugan out. Yeah. His middle name is Lindbergh, Charles Lindbergh. Yes. He's named after the fucking Nazi.
Yeah, makes sense.
And like Howard is like bragging up on him as a way of bragging about the business. You know, founded one of the leading law firms in the Southwest. Like he's just kind of going on.
Oh yeah, I mean I didn't really think of him as bragging in this. I think this is a weird like admiration that he thinks Jimmy will share.
Yeah.
In this, personally, like I think Howard is too grief struck to be crapulent during these like couple episodes here.
Yeah, that's possible. It feels weird. It feels weird to say. Founded one of the leading law firms in the Southwest.
It's what it is. Is he sat down and he really really wanted to encapsulate somebody who he thought was great, and he's feeling tons of guilt.
Yeah,
as we're gonna find out later. So he's gassing him up extra and does not understand his audience.
Yes,
like the fact that he's doing it, I think, is genuine. The fact that he's doing it to Jimmy is insensitive, and Kim's gonna call him out for that very thing. A little bit.
But Jimmy listens for several paragraphs of this. Howard's reciting parts of it from memory, and Jimmy just puts the phone down and walks away. My read on this is like, Jimmy just doesn't show up in it. Like, there's no survived by, there's no anything. Like, what he's hearing is this life of massive accomplishment that has nothing to do with him.
Yeah. And also, he doesn't need to hear all these things about how he's great right now, about how Chuck's really great right now, even if, you know, Jimmy Message or not. Like, this is, it's, and even in a, like, if these were two normal people, this is not fun.
Yeah.
Like, you don't want to hear the person who just died reduced to a series of sentences and achievements.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. This is just, you know, Jimmy's arc over these kind of two seasons is going to be disconnection, right? Or season and a half, rather. You know, he's unplugged. He's very consciously turning a blind eye to anything related to Chuck.
Yeah, he's turning outward. Mm-hmm. The you know, Kim picks up the phone and says, "Yo, that sounds good." And she's like, "Okay, you know, we got a drink." She pulls out shot glasses and pours them some of the fancy tequila that Jimmy bought for the Sandpiper thing. And we get a kind of a nice shot here. Several hours later, most of the bottle, Kim has disappeared. She's sleeping, and Jimmy's just staring, and the sun has risen.
It's the same position. Entire bottle.
Yeah, he's just sat there drinking.
Yeah,
not a great idea when you're grieving. Nope. I know it sounds like it is, and it is in movies, but don't do it.
Yeah.
Hector is loaded up onto an ambulance, and Gus is just staring at Nacho. Gus Dar is in full effect.
Yeah. He's got a feeling. He's got one of his little, there's a bomb under my car hunches here.
Yes.
Yeah. And, like, you know, moves to leave and then looks back at Nacho twice before calling Bolsa. Yep. And not just trying to get rid of the evidence. He spots a drainage grate with kind of a chunk out of it, and he thinks, I'm going to do my fancy drops and subtly get rid of these fake pills down there. But Gus interrupts them because business has to continue. Bolsa wants to speak with both of them.
Yeah. Bolsa waits for them in the chicken warehouse and says, Hector had a stroke, but nothing else changes. You know, Salamanca territory remains Salamanca territory. Mm-hmm. You know, he understands that they're in a really precarious position here.
Yeah.
As a thing, because he also does not want a bunch of Salamanca showing up.
No,
Salamanca's in trouble. Mm-hmm. You know, he says, you know, you could do this right. Things can go very well for you to Nacho and Arturo. They're in charge. Mm-hmm. Bolsa asks what Gus thinks, and Gus says someone's going to make a move on them, which is going to bring war, which is going to bring chaos, which is going to bring the DEA.
Like, it's no good for anybody.
Yeah. So the Nacho goes to this river overpass to throw the fake pills away through this, empties it out first, but Victor has tailed him.
Yeah.
He's being tracked and saw that he threw something away. I like to think of Victor wading in the river. Trying to find what this is.
There's the whole team of divers out there.
Yeah, just doing a section by section of victors.
A hard target gridded search.
Bring me 20 dead-eyed goons.
20 dead-eyed goons in huge puffer jackets?
Yeah.
I don't know why victors always wearing.
It's so they can float in the water.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that's how they look. They're a team.
For his entire run in this series, Victor's wearing a puffer jacket. He's like the little brother in Christmas Story.
Yeah, he looks very resistant to being punched. Uh-huh. Like, he's doing it to protect himself from Mike.
Yeah.
And then they add some fun to this episode, because this is a tense and sad episode.
It's a very dour episode.
Yeah, very dour. Yeah. This is one of my favorite montages in the show, maybe my favorite. I think this is really fun. A nerdy guy goes to leave for work. His kid asks him to fix his bike, and he's doing good dadding stuff. Like, do you want to do it or should I do it? Okay, watch. You know, you just give this, you just give some give. All right, what do you say? Thank you, Dad.
Yeah,
you know,
fixing the bike chain.
Yeah. He goes to leave for work, but his battery is dead. He calls a report that he's late, and he sees that his ID badge is gone as well.
Just
not a good day.
Kind of checking all over his briefcase. He's been mic'd.
Yep.
He's got all this, and I really like the idea. So this guy's bald, and I really like the idea of Mike, like, casing the parking lot at Madrigal to identify this guy Barry is the character's name, is half Mike's age, but just like, I just need somebody who, like, you know, will pass just the first glance check, and then just, you know, doing some like thief simulator stuff. Like, I gotta get his entire schedule down.
Yeah. It's real fun. A spinoff game where just Mike being an operator. No plot, no story, don't give me lore.
No.
So he took it to the magical offices, and this is really fun. Like, he goes, he just grabs a clipboard from a random desk, took official, walks around, he stops in the break room and just grabs a magical cup That. He's like, I'm magical.
No, I'm magical.
two dipshits having a conversation about who would win a fight between Muhammad Ali and Bruce Lee. This is really fun. I like that it ties in Mike's boxer history to this. It also reminds me of this thing the wiki pointed out, and so I don't want to take credit for it, but I was like, the show hasn't done something like this in a really long time. And then I was like, oh no, yeah, this is Badger and Skinny Pete bullshit.
Yeah,
like this is, or like Doc Hammer and Jackson, you know, just any of those two characters, any kind of blowjob brothers just having a conversation like this, a dumb guy conversation.
You know,
and then Mike just settling it with contempt is really great.
The Bruce Lee shooter here is very much like, oh, he knows all the he knows the anatomy. You know, like all he needs to do is find an opening. He's saying like, no, not like a movie fight, like you see, how heavy is he? Oh, it's probably a buck 30.
Yeah.
And Mike's like, does he have a gun?
Yeah.
Does Bruce Lee have a gun?
Yeah, if not, it's Ali in like 3 minutes. Pretty great.
Yeah.
They stop when he's about to leave. This is mirroring the cold open.
Yeah.
You know, and you get to see the contrast and how they handle it. You know, Jimmy gets panicked about this shit and just go, hey, stop a minute. Do you sign Tina's birthday card? You know, would you mind? No problem. You know, and he goes over to sign it and he raises Reach for the Stars, Barry H.
Reach for the Stars. It's so good.
It's really good. It's very funny.
Yeah.
Really, really nice.
Yeah.
Goes through the warehouse on a golf cart, finding all these infractions, you know, going through the trash and everything, and then calls out a guy. You know, he's like, do you want to tell me why you guys aren't using lifting bolts? And the guy doesn't, you know, this happens at every workplace. Like, you just stop following rules here. And he's just like, stop what you're doing. Go do the thing.
Yeah. You know? Do it right.
Do it right. Exactly.
God, one of my favorite concepts that we've arrived at on this show is the internal Ehrmantraut.
Having an internal or eternal Ehrmantraut is useful.
Yeah. You got to put that where it belongs. You know,
do it right.
Take precautions.
Don't put it down. Put it away. He finds Barry, hands over the ID card, and Barry's just like very thankful. And he goes, he's like, oh, who are you? And he goes, I need to talk to your manager. And Mike lays into the manager. He found a bunch of immersive sim shit. People had passwords written on post-it notes, all this shit. And the manager keeps stopping and saying, like, you know, who are you? And he goes, Ehrmantraut, the security consultant. He says, I wasn't told about that. And he's like, you wouldn't, would you? I love that. It's a consultant for security.
It's not a secret shopper if you know they're going to be there.
Yes. Right? You know, he tells him to call Lydia at corporate.
Yeah. And really that's all we get of this. Again, spinoff show. I need it. Jonathan Bakes probably has a couple of years left in him.
Yeah. Jim and Kimmy are I'm going to keep doing it that way.
Yeah.
Are at a church for Chuck's funeral. You know, they're playing Ciceline, this song that Chuck was playing on piano. And we're seeing all the guest stars here.
Yes.
All the people are giving condolences to Jimmy. We got Schweikert, all your Schweikert heads and stuff.
Man, Schweikert heads are going to be eating good.
They're going to be real good here. So you Coakley fiends here. And Jimmy's very miserable as people we know and then people we don't know come up and express their condolences. This is exceedingly well observed. The fact that you have to do the grief parade at something that should be your moment of grief. Sucks. The way that our mourning culture and our funeral culture works that puts the bereaved in a position of service immediately after, I think sucks.
Yeah. You know, I am going to stand by the casket and receive everybody.
Absolve everyone else's as they stand in line. Yeah.
You know?
To recognize this. Like they have a need. They need to get something off their chest and feel a little bit better. They've done their due diligence. And you just have to be the sink for that. You know, I don't know. I really hate it.
Bring me a fucking casserole. Bring me a gift card.
When I went to my mom's funeral, I was surprised. Like at one point I was talking to the funeral director. I'm like, is there a room that I can just like be in?
Yeah.
That doesn't have people in it. And he had to show me to his office.
Oh, wow.
Like they didn't have like just like a privacy room. So I sat in this dude's office and was like crying. And like, I was like, this is, you know, just because I'm me. Mm-hmm. I was really overwhelmed with grief at the time, but I was also thinking, like, I could do this better. Uh-huh. I could design this a lot better. There should be like a room with a comfy couch, maybe even a bed.
Uh-huh.
If I wanted to just be flat on my back, mm-hmm. you know, doing this, that'd be great. And there should be multiple rooms with like multiple configurations of seating, like in case I just want to talk to somebody without having all these strangers around, mm-hmm. you know, people. Like, there should have been a lot for me and my stepdad. Yeah, that was not there, as opposed to us managing the motions of other people and logistics mm-hmm. nonstop.
Yeah, just everything taking place in like the massive, you know, for lack of a better word, like funeral sanctuary.
Yes.
Like at a church where like there is no, like, I don't know, there's no privacy for it. It's just you're constantly aware of like everybody standing in the same room. Yeah,
yeah, it sucks. It's it's no good.
Yeah,
a lot of sympathy for Jimmy here.
Yeah, the funeral home that my family uses. I don't know of a better way to put that, but just like the funeral home in the town where I live, they have a kitchen, like a break room kitchenette, and so like I've spent a lot of time in that, sitting at the little kitchen table, drinking the tiny waters.
Yeah, just, tiny, you know, waters.
Just me and my brother, just kind of not talking.
Tiny funeral coffees. Yeah. They had a kitchen, but there were people in it.
Oh, okay.
Like I wanted an isolation booth.
Yeah,
basically, you know, I'm not above like people seeing me cry, especially mm-hmm. in, you know, this is a perfect. I'm not ashamed of it, but it just felt weird because I didn't know these people. I felt too exposed.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so they go there. Howard comforts Rebecca here, and Jimmy and Kim drive home, and Chuck is sitting on the curb. Like
that would be a surprise. Sorry, Howard is.
Chuck is like a surprise, bitch.
I get characters mixed up when I'm taking the notes because I'm thinking about one and writing the other.
I knew it was Howard too. I just was reading on autopilot, but I do think Chuck being there is really great. Phase one is complete. down. He puts on the pork pie hat.
Yeah. Howard is there. And I've never seen a man so exhausted.
He went from like regular to comically drunk. He went from like unemployed, and not even unemployed in a movie, unemployed in a stage play.
Uh-huh.
You know, they had to like do an extra.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Apparently Patrick Fabian consulted with the dialogue coach in mm-hmm. order to like, how do I sell that I am somebody who is completely at ends?
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. But he's here to kind of like, you know, ostensibly break some news or, you know, provide some extra context and put some idea. You know, this is very selfish, I think.
I don't think it's malicious. It's extremely selfish.
Yes. Yeah.
Extremely selfish.
It's important to highlight the difference between those because those are two very different things.
The effect is what matters, but mm-hmm. I do think the motivation is interesting here. So he says like, listen, I feel like you deserve to know. I don't think what happened was an accident.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I forced him out. Over mm-hmm. the insurance. And Jimmy looks struck, you know, at this point, and says, what insurance? And has him explain it, because in the story, he doesn't know.
Yeah.
You know? And Howard is feeling immense guilt about this.
Yes.
Like, this is extreme guilt. He's trying to absolve himself. This is like a big end boss version of what people do at funerals to kind of, mm-hmm. like, give a grief sink into something.
Yeah, just like, I wish I could have done more. You know, I wish I would have spent more time. I wish I would have been there more near the end.
Yeah.
Like, this is him doing a confession. Like, he is looking for some kind of catharsis here.
Yeah, he needs absolution, which is something, again, I really understand. Mm-hmm. Like, the need to explain to yourself when you feel guilty is something I relate to a lot.
What Howard is hoping to hear is, like, hey, it wasn't your fault, right? Like, he is looking specifically to Jimmy here, I think, you know, as somebody else who was used by Chuck. Right.
Yeah.
Like somebody who can understand like, hey, like just, you know, we're in a similar position here. Both of us had these big breakups near the end.
He wants the thing of it's like, hey, it's no one's fault.
Yeah.
Like that you can say he's definitely going to Jimmy for this. Like I don't think that him and Kim have that kind of relationship.
Oh God, no.
At all. Like, he's like, I think he did what he did because of me. And Jimmy goes, well, Howard, I guess that's your cross to bear.
Yeah.
And this is a brutal line.
Mm-hmm.
Howard like stares at him and kind of goes limp. Kimmy is shocked. this. And then Jimmy gets up to feed the goldfish here and just starts whistling, making coffee. Oh, look at her go. And this is the face of somebody who's clearly not dealing with their grief.
Yeah.
At this. Yeah.
Like, here he is. Howard's going to serve this role a few times, actually. Yes. Just being the person who is, you know, enacting the grief more. So Jimmy, you know, can kind of see, oh, that's what I would be if I engaged with this.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, and well, okay. Jimmy can not feel bad about the insurance thing because he found somebody else who, you know, who touched Chuck. Yeah.
I know. I think he feels really bad about it.
I think he feels really bad. I think that this is a conscious decision that he's like, okay, yeah, well, no, I can, this I'm is something I can work with.
Fake it as I make it as a kind of a thing. We're going to see all of this stuff leak out.
Yes.
Like his shadow self is going to just like burst at the seams and for the whole beginning part of the season. Like the next episode when he makes all of his weird, you know, takes it out on those poor copy guys who I just love so much. that's just this leaking out.
Yeah.
He can't hold all of this bullshit in.
Yeah.
You know, he's lying to himself. And it's going to drive a wedge between him and Kim as well and make their relationship more difficult, which is, that's also a very real thing.
Yeah.
You know,
just, okay, you went somewhere, right?
Yeah.
Like, you're not reacting, you know, in like, not even just the usual way, like in a remotely human way.
Yeah. This isn't healthy.
Yeah.
You know, this is one of these things where, and Kim will attempt to broach this and everything, but I feel like the way this storyline plays out is it's a consequence a little bit of their keep it light and breezy relationship.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, them being two people who never talk about stuff. One of the things, if you want to just keep it light and breezy and close to the vest, means when shit gets real, you're kind of fucked.
Yeah.
You know, it's a good reason not to do that all the time. Mm-hmm. Like, it's fine. You know, it's a fine way to be, but like, you need to be selective about it because otherwise this will happen.
Yeah. No, I've had relationships fall apart because I just didn't want to talk with somebody about something important.
Yeah.
Right? It's like, oh, no, this is, oh boy, that backfires.
Yeah. make sure, you know, have that kind of, the people who are important in your life, have a relationship with them where you can talk to them about whatever you need to talk to about it and set that up before you need that.
Yeah.
You know, that's a relationship to try to cultivate, not putting that on you. I'm saying on them.
No. You know, I say that only with a lot of hindsight and growth since
like
then.
It's the kind of thing where you want to cultivate that early.
Yeah. God, just the line, you know, Howard saying, it never occurred to me that I could hurt him. You know, I just thought he was so strong, but he wasn't.
Yeah.
Just fucking heartbreaking. Like, Howard is being very insensitive about this. And he is, you know, I think that he, you know, from all available information deserves what Kim puts on him next episode.
Yeah.
But it's hard to see him as a monster.
Well, he's going to get a lot of stuff he doesn't deserve.
Yes. Yeah.
As a result of that.
Yeah.
It is insensitive in a really human way.
Yes.
Like this really makes sense to me as a thing. Like, yeah, of course I need the brother of the deceased, their only remaining family member to say I'm okay.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. There's weird parallels with this, with what Howard does when he tries to learn how to move on from this. And then later when Jimmy is going to spend a lot of time directly grappling that with like Bad Choice Road shit.
Yeah.
Like, how do you wake up and do stuff after this kind of thing? And like the greater the input for that, the greater the thing that makes you ask that question, the harder it is to actually do.
Yeah.
Afterwards, you know, like it's interesting. Lots of parallels going on.
Yeah.
That's the episode. What can people do?
If you like this show, you can go to patreon.com/chuckfeedtv and throw us a few bucks a month and get a whole bunch of bonus content. If you like hearing us talk about media, that's how you can get Unfilmable, our show about horror movies and media and such.
Yeah, we would appreciate that. You can check out a bunch of other shows, Premium Wafts, Dispatch Roundups, things like that. Higher levels get you even more stuff. Mm-hmm. You can also leave us ratings, reviews on Apple Podcasts, Podcast Addict, anywhere you find podcasts. Subscribe, talk about us on message boards, talk about us on the Reddit, join us on our Discord if you're on our Patreon. All great things to do for you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and join us and thank you, our producer, Gwen, who also composed the music.
Thank you, Gwen.
Yeah, we appreciate her very much. Until next time, think about grieving before you have to do it, I guess.
Make a plan.
Yeah, make a plan. Like, kind of seriously.
Yeah.